All right, we are back. Episode 239, Two Drunk Brothers in the Podcast. Coming at you today, we're going to talk about some Sweet 16. We're going to do kind of talk about what happened over the opening weekend of NCAA tournament. UFL is back. And then betting on your own unders. We're going to talk about some scandals going on in the sports world with athletes gambling. So without further ado, opening weekend, March Madness. This year, I was not super excited about filling out a bracket because I knew it could go one of two ways. I went on the verge of the wild way. As you can imagine, my bracket is dead and has been dead since day one.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew my bracket was dead because I went a little rogue and bit me in the ass, but it doesn't matter because no one's ever any good. And for some reason, somehow we lost Ethan. So, uh-oh.
He is switching up his headphones.
Yeah. I am in the 18th percentile of my bracket, and I'm in 9th out of 10th place in our group pool.
Guess who's in 10th?
Oh, well, now actually me and you are tied for last. Me, you, yeah. And Levi. Shout out Levi.
No, I thought he was in first.
Oh, Ico. Ico. Levi is in first. Oh. Yeah.
So me and Jarrett dead last again. We went bigger. We went bold here because we thought that it could pay off. I felt dirty going crazy chalk, which granted probably should have. This was a weekend in which the public betting perspective ate. Like absolutely disgusting. They went 38-13 against the spread. So heading into this weekend, you would have to think Vegas is going to eat right back.
They're going to get eaten.
You think so?
I don't know. We'll see.
Again for the second weekend in a row.
Oh, that Vegas lost their ass.
Yeah, yeah. The public went 38-13.
Oh shit! I wasn't listening. Yeah, it's not great. Yeah, Vegas is going to get their money back, which makes sense because I had a very good weekend up until Sunday. I think I was in the green every single day up until Sunday, and then Sunday I went a whopping 0-8 on Sunday. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely not the weekend of the underdog. That is for sure. Took a lot of dogs, did not pay off. So there you have it. We had, speaking of the underdog too, this year could be a year theoretically where it's all 1-2 seeds across the board. Don't think that's going to happen, but it is likely. In the last 10 years, all but 2 years have featured a team that is 9th seeded or higher in the Elite Eight. This year, there's only one team that could do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel pretty confident North Carolina State getting it done against Marquette. Marquette hasn't impressed me. I have Marquette in my bracket. I also have them playing Kentucky at this point in time, but obviously that's not happening. Obviously there's one team to do it. It's going to be NC State. So I feel pretty confident in them, I think.
You'll see.
Yeah, they're probably I think one of the biggest dogs, the third biggest dog of the weekend. So before, I guess we'll talk a little bit about that before we dive into some of the other stuff from this past weekend, since we already are. Ethan, what do you think about that matchup with Marquette?
I mean, based on what I've watched from both teams, it's just hard to deny that NC State has gotten hot at the right time. Obviously they ran through the ACC tournament. Nobody expected them to. It's one of those things where this team shouldn't even be here. Had they not won the ACC tournament, they probably would not have gotten a bid. So they've taken every bit of advantage of it, and they've looked pretty impressive over their first two games, whereas Marquette has gotten the job done. They looked impressive in their first game. But I'm kind of with Jarrett. It feels like riding two different wagons. And while I'm not going to say outright that, you know, NC State's going to go and they're going to take care of business, I would not be shocked if they pulled off this upset.
I agree. I'm kind of torn because I'm in the boat where it's like, okay, in the past, historically, a higher seed makes the Elite Eight. But also, if you're on the side of this being Vegas's weekend, the public is one of the bit heavier sides on this game.
NC State. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus the 6.5. So we'll see. I'll probably lean NC State just because of the fun. You got to ride them out till they die.
Yep.
But there's a, granted, there has been a lack of upsets in this tournament. Could we see the trend continue? Yes. I looked it up today, and the NCAA record book defines upset being as being five or more seeds lower than the seed they are playing. So basically 6-11 in the first round and lower.
Huh.
Yeah.
By that measure, there have only been seven upsets this far in the tournament, and the likelihood of having more, not a lot. It would have to come from NC State and then
Clemson if they faced a one.
Yeah, Clemson making a run.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, which I looked at the stats, and I said them last week on the pod, the average amount of upsets in the tournament, which they also counted anything 11 or higher as being an upset, overall, like over like the last decade, was 8.5 in an entire tournament. So if we had 7 already, I mean, data shows that NC State should win by that measure.
And Clemson to the Final Four.
Yes. Yeah.
No. But, I mean, NC State may be the Final Four. Yeah. I mean, historically, should. But the averages, the law of averages might equal that out a little bit less.
Yeah.
We'll see. I thought one of my biggest takeaways from the weekend was the scheduling of the games. And I bitched about it a lot because it was awful. Like, I just felt throughout the day that there was no action going on. And they just backloaded all the games into the night slate.
Specifically, yeah. Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, it was horrible on Saturday and Sunday.
Yep. That's something that I've heard quite a few people talk about this week alone on radio is just, and apparently they've been doing it for somebody pulled up a stat that I was listening to earlier. Like, it's been like 5 years that they've been doing it. But like this year, I think we really felt it because a lot of the games over the weekend were just not close. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very. Like on Saturday and Sunday, there was two games where they were the only game on, the first game and the second game. And that's all you had till 4 o'clock in the evening.
Yep.
Here's my thought process. You know, those first 2 days you have 16 games each day. Why don't we start it on a Friday? Because I feel like if we start it on a Friday, you know, the first round, like round one, day one starts on a Friday. And then obviously the second half of round one on a Saturday. And then you could do the first half of round two when you only have 8 games on a Sunday and maybe do it like start them at like 2 o'clock or maybe 1 o'clock. I don't know if you need to start at 11 a.m. for the round of 32 for games.
Probably not.
I think you could start a little bit later in the day and then not have a game tip off at 8:40. I get it. The problem is you have a lot of these games happening in the same location. So you have to like go, you know, if a game goes later, goes over time, it pushes it back. But I mean, fuck, Thursday night, that Kansas game, they get over till 12:05.
Midnight. Yeah. Midnight. And then it was the same thing with, I think it was pretty much the last game of the day, every day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Cause I'm pretty sure it was the San Diego State game on Sunday and it was 11:30 when they got over.
Yeah, the Creighton game on Saturday night was super late because it went into double overtime, single. I can't remember. No, it was just one overtime.
Double.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't like the starting times of the games. I felt like, and again, it could just be memory being different, but I remember like Travis that one time in college. I think it was my last year.
Yeah.
Taught at Mizzou. I canceled class on Thursday and Friday of March Madness, and we went over to Brett's house, and I felt like that Thursday at Brett's house, like there was nonstop action on all day long.
You know what it is? It's corporate America wanting people to not take off work anymore so they're not missing out. Because honestly, you don't take off work, you're only missing 2 games, 3 games maybe.
Yeah, I didn't watch anything during the day on Thursday, Friday, and I didn't start tuning in until probably like 5 o'clock, 5:30, maybe even 6. And I didn't think it much.
I took off on Thursday just because I had a day to spare. Me and Ethan went golfing in the afternoon, and we golfed at 1 o'clock and didn't feel like we missed anything. So, yeah, it's just – I feel like something they should maybe switch back to the old format. What they should switch to the new format, however, is the fucking review system. Because it is horrendous. Like, there are 5 reviews within the last 3 minutes, but you can't review a foul call.
Yeah, that Samford call was bad.
Yeah. I was going to say, just the officiating in general this weekend, and we've been talking about it all season in every sport. We've been talking about it for the last 4 years, and we'll get to this maybe never. In a little bit, but they're not making it any easier in the NFL now. And so it's like they got to start holding refs accountable. We hold players accountable by fining them if they do certain shit, if they say something to the refs. Well, if the refs blatantly get a call wrong in the middle of a game, there's got to be some sort of repercussion, whether it's, guess what? You don't get to ref March Madness for the rest of the tournament now because you missed a blatant call that anybody else probably could have made. I don't know. I just feel like that there has to be some sort of repercussion in that regard if we want refs to be better.
Yeah. Especially for me, for college basketball, I've always been a proponent, not just college basketball, but even the NBA, of the refs swallowing their whistle a little bit in those crunch moments. If you want to call that clear block that Samford had against Kansas a foul in the 17th minute of the second half, or, you know, the ninth minute of the first half, fine. But when you're down to the very last, like one of the last plays of the game, and you're going to call a game determining call there, like, I just think it's egregious. And I agree with Ethan, like, refs need to be, like, it stems across all sports. It started for me. I really noticed at a young age with umps in baseball, like how they could just clearly miss balls, strikes and balls, and clearly miss, you know, people being safer out. And then now it's just kind of stemmed over into the NFL, like calling horrible pass interference, roughing the passer calls. Like, we have these reviews, and like the NFL and like other leagues put out statements the day after saying, you know, we say, sorry, we got that wrong. Why can't we fix that in the moment? Why can't we stop and take an extra minute or two to review it in the moment? And be like, yeah, that was the wrong call. We're going to reverse it, you know, and ball goes back to whoever. So,
especially when you're taking the extra 4 minutes to look and add 6/10 of a second on the clock when the ball goes out of bounds. Like,
yeah.
What are we doing?
In that moment, it makes no sense to me why we can't review that play. It was so clearly obvious. It was a clear and obvious rebound, unbeknownst to that Kansas fan in the bar on Thursday night, who just thought he knew everything in the world. But it was so obvious, and all it takes is them to be like, oh, so hold on, we're going to go to the board really fast, see a couple replays. Yep, sure shit, we missed that. Okay, clean block, ball for Samford. Let's go.
Yeah.
Game over. Well, they got their karma because they ended up getting crushed by 20 points against Gonzaga. So,
yeah.
Yep. There it is. There you have it. So, with that being said, get a little bit of positives out of the way. I will say it was a good weekend. I enjoyed watching it. There were some phenomenal games. Some that came down.
Phenomenal games.
But there were also more games than I remember being 20, 30 point games.
We didn't get any buzzer beaters, though.
None technically, but we had like 5 overtimes, a double overtime.
Yeah.
That Colorado shot against Florida wasn't a buzzer beater, but it technically was. Like, because first of all, that could not have been more identical to the Kawhi buzzer beater in Toronto, which also had Kevin Harlan on the call. Just insane.
Yeah.
There was a buzzer beater. It was it Oakland? Who hit the buzzer? The 3? Alabama?
I see. I don't think there was an actual buzzer beater. There was still like time left on the clock.
He had it at the baseline and dished it around the guy. He was at the top of the key and banged it 3 to send it to overtime.
I don't know.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Not a buzzer beater to win it, but yes.
No.
Yes. Buzzer beater for sure to send it overtime. It was, oh my God, is that tall dude?
I know. Why am I blanking on that? You know what I mean, though.
What am I thinking of? It happened on Sunday, did it not?
Dude.
Was it? I'm looking it up right now.
So am I.
Wasn't Bama because they didn't go to overtime, I don't think.
Oh, it was Texas A&M.
Yes, against Houston. When they came back from down fucking 7 or 11 with like a minute and a half left.
Because Houston could not get a rebound to save their life on the defensive end. And then they had it at the baseline with like one to 2 seconds left, and he hit it to go to overtime. It's technically a buzzer beater, but
yeah, and that one was cool. That tall dude, as I described.
See, I'm talking about like when I talk about buzzer beater, I'm talking about like RJ Hunter, Georgia State buzzer beater. Right. I'm talking like Villanova at the buzzer beater to win the national championship over North Carolina. Yeah, game winner. Like, what I'm talking about. But
the closest one,
Marcus Denman half court
game.
Marcus Denman half court. Yeah. Colston.
The Colorado Florida game in itself was just insane. To have two teams score 100 plus points without going to overtime, just in college is just wild.
Yeah. Nutty. Don't know what happened there. So there are 8 games this weekend. We'll run through them all.
Can I talk about the schedule on Thursday, Friday real quick?
This week?
I love the Thursday schedule. Are we starting at 11 a.m. on Friday because it's Good Friday and they think people are off work? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, it has to be.
Friday, they have them all stretched out, 11, 2, 6, and 8:40. Whereas on Thursday,
I'm seeing 6:09, 6:39.
Oh, I'm on Bovada, so I guess they got the
I guess they haven't updated them yet. Updated times. No, they all start at 6
on Thursday and Friday. Well, that's good.
Yeah. So we'll have 4 games. Three overlapping, maybe.
Yeah.
Depending on how late that first game goes. So we'll cover we're going to go in bracket order because that's how I have them listed out. So top left to bottom right, not in chronological order when they're happening. So we'll go UConn versus San Diego State, UConn 10.5-point favorites. Here's a snippet for you. UConn has covered in 8 straight NCAA tournament games dating back to last year. They're on a 24-6 against the spread in their past 30 NCAA tournament games.
I wanted to bet on UConn in the round of 32 game, and I was too chicken shit to do it because they were a double-digit point spread. I think I might pull the trigger here. I don't see San Diego State being able to hang with them at all.
So I'll make a bold prediction here. Well, that may not even be that bold. I wasn't that high on UConn coming into this tournament because I was like, winning back-to-back championships is really tough. I thought that, yes, they would make it far. I just didn't think that they would get the job done this year all the way. After watching them in their first 2 tournament games, they may not lose a game by less than 10 points for the rest of the tournament. I really think they could beat everyone by double digits.
They might not win a game by less than 10 points.
Yes, sorry, yes.
Okay. I was like,
yeah. Wait, what? I think they could win every game they play by 10-plus points down the stretch.
Well, that's the way they're feeling. Their past 6 Sweet 16 trips have resulted in 4 championships.
There you go. So put the future out right now. UConn to win the national championship.
I think it's like plus 300.
Sure. I might bet that. I'm not even joking.
Yeah.
I might throw a 50 burger on that.
Then they lose to San Diego State.
Probably so.
I don't think so. I like them minus 10.5 here. San Diego State almost lost to UAB. Yes, they destroyed Yale, but let's be honest, they did not belong there either.
I bet on UAB. Let's go.
So they might win this game by 20.
Yeah.
Next up in that corner of the bracket, we have Illinois versus Iowa State. This is the closest spread all weekend long, and it is Iowa State minus 1.5. This is a tough one for me.
So fun fact about this game, because of Houston's 95 points they gave up last game, this game now features the number 1 ranked offense versus the number 1 ranked defense. Illinois has the number 1 ranked offense in the country. Iowa State now has the number 1 ranked defense. They were number 2 before that Houston game. It hurts me to say, and I don't want to like be like no shot Illinois wins this game, but when you have offense versus defense, when I get into these tournament games, defense outweighs offense to me, and I think that Iowa State has the ability to pull it off because of how good their defense is. Now, I want Illinois to win. Absolutely. I'm just saying when I look at that, it was hard for me to be like, oh yeah, Illinois got this because I know how bad their defense can be.
See, I'm on the opposite side because I don't want, I'm not an Illinois fan, but I like them in this game because we saw what Iowa State led up against South Dakota State. Now you're going up against the number 1 offense in the country. You have a team that I think is overperformed on offense in Iowa State. I think they could we have not seen them struggle how they can, like we've seen them struggle in the regular season. If they even show 7 to 10 minutes of that in this game, and it's going to be over.
Yeah. Yeah, I also like Illinois. You guys, I don't know, you guys didn't really flame me, but I had them as a Final Four team. Now, seeing how UConn's played in those first couple of games, I'm not – so sold on that. I think they get to the Elite Eight. I do like Illinois. A little bit of value there at plus 105. I think everyone and their brother's going to be on Iowa State. I think
just me being a cautious fan and like knowing that three of the last 4 years when they've made, or no, they've made the tournament, I think, every year the last 4 years, and they haven't made it out of the first weekend. So maybe, you know, they've made it out of the first weekend now. Maybe now tides are turning and they'll continue to push forward. But I think it was just me thinking like, oh, well, here we go. Now we're going to face a good team. It's wraps. But I mean, you've got some good analysis there to make me believe that Illinois has a little bit more in the gas.
Yeah, it's just
now
it's kind of split right now.
I know a lot of people don't usually put their bets until late Wednesday or Thursday morning, but it's damn near 50-50.
Okay, I feel good about it. Yeah, it's just getting that camel off your back. When I saw that stat that they hadn't made it out of the first weekend in 19 years, that kind of fucking blew my mind. I guess that was the year they went and won it all in 2005.
That was the year they made the national championship game and lost North Carolina. Yeah,
that's right. Tyler Hansbrough. Yep.
I remember Travis. Did you watch that game in my bedroom on my box TV?
Yep. Back in the day.
Yeah. Yes, sir. All right. Speaking of UNC, we'll head into their game next. They're going up against Alabama. Here's my one fun fact for this game. Hubert Davis is 8-0 against the spread his NCAA tournament career.
Hubert Davis, pardon my.
Yeah,
the coach for UNC.
Perfect. Thank you. I was like, which team does he coach for?
Nate Oates is the coach for Alabama.
Okay. Yeah. I had Alabama winning this game, but also didn't have him play North Carolina in my bracket. So I do think North Carolina gets the job done. A bet I'm looking at in this game that I love is the under of 173.5. Because that is incredibly high. Alabama hasn't hit an over in either their tournament games.
Yeah, which completely contradicts what I said last week. I was like, hammer their over in every game.
They've just been so high.
They have been high, yeah.
Yeah, and this is even higher than their last one. The last one was 167,
169.
Yeah, I like the under in this game, personally. That's probably what I'll bet overall. I mean, I do think that North Carolina gets it done. I'm not in love with a four-point spread. That, to me, is – I think it was like 2.5. I'd be like probably all over North Carolina, but – I like the under a little bit more. Do you think North Carolina gets the job done, though?
This is the highest tournament total since 1995.
Yeah, see, you almost have to take the under.
And I was going to say, I like the thought process of taking the under. Obviously, UNC is a little different than Grand Canyon when it comes to scoring, so I could see this total getting up there for sure. Like you said, if they haven't hit it yet, it's a tournament game. They're going to be fighting hard. Defense has to be played. So
I don't hate the thought process. They haven't really impressed me overall. They've squeaked by against Charleston and Grand Canyon in the games they just couldn't put away down the stretch. And I feel like this is where the game where their lack of defense might bite them, because we just saw what UNC did to Michigan State. They went on a 20-1 run. 1 second, Michigan State was up. 5 minutes later, the game was over.
Yep.
I mean, and there's no coming back from that. The best bet for Alabama has just let Elliott Cadeau shoot wide open threes. Because I don't know if you watched the game, but that's what Michigan State did. Dude shoots 16% on the year, and he'll just fire him away. So might as well just let him shoot.
Absolutely.
So we're all in agreeance, UNC and under.
Yep.
Correct. Okay. Next one. I'm going to let you guys take the pick on this one. Clemson versus Arizona. Arizona's -7.5.
I hate the betting angle on this. Either way you go, I haven't been high on Clemson. I've bet against them every single tournament game so far. I'm going to continue that trend. I don't know if I'll take the 7.5. Arizona will probably be a lay piece for me. I have Arizona going to my Final Four. So I think they're a sneaky Final Four team. Caleb Love has started to turn it up. Been seeing a lot of Caleb Love edits on TikTok for some reason. I don't know why. Him like playing
St. Louis algorithm.
And playing and then going to Arizona. But, I like Arizona in this matchup. I don't know if I like the 7.5 that it's at, though.
I don't love the 7.5.
No.
Especially because what we've seen from Clemson so far, they haven't had a close game. I mean, the Baylor game was, like, not a blowout, but they were in control for
35 and I bet on Baylor, so.
So did I. I think Arizona wins. I won't take the 7.5. But I'll root for Clemson just because I want to see a lower seed go, or a higher seed, whichever way you look at it. Ethan, what do you got?
Yeah, I wanted to stay away from this game entirely because I was so low on both of these teams coming into the tournament. I don't think I had either of them here at this point. Remember, I was really high on New Mexico. Clemson routed them. I was really low on Baylor, so that kind of worked out. But then on the flip side of it, I didn't have Arizona going super far in my bracket. I believe I had them losing to New Mexico in this game. So part of me was like, if I had them losing to New Mexico, maybe I just ride the hot hand in Clemson. I'm just going to stay away from this game entirely and just hope that it's a good one. But I couldn't find an angle. I really wasn't a believer in either of these teams. So I was just like, I'm just not going to touch it.
Probably the best thing to do. There's seven other games. flipping on over to the right side of the bracket, we've got Houston -4.5 versus Duke. Duke has lost five straight tournament games against the spread when they are the higher seed.
You mean so lower seed, technically?
Whichever way you want to put it.
Yeah, yeah.
When they are the seed that is not better than the one they're playing.
Yeah, Houston's my national championship team, so... I think I almost wanted to bet. I don't remember how bad did Duke like blow Vermont out of the water in the first round.
They were close for most of the game, and then they just pulled away late second half, and they ended up winning by 17.
And they blew JMU out of the water.
Yeah, I remember that.
So they've looked dominant, but here's the trends. Like I said, Duke's lost five straight tournament games against the spread as the higher seed. Houston, 6-1 straight up in tournament games in the state of Texas.
Yeah. And on top of that, Houston has himself a dog in shit. If it gets down to it at the end of the game and somebody needs to take over, we saw exactly what he's capable of doing, which he did in overtime against Texas A&M. I think they let off the gas pedal at the end of that game, and that's what allowed Texas A&M to come back on top of the fact that they couldn't grab a board to save their lives, missing key free throws. I think that gets corrected in the 5 days that they have to correct it. And so if you jump into this game, again, better team. Duke, you just laid out all the statistics, but also Duke, I don't think has been a super dominant team this season. They've had a couple of dominant games, but they're about to run into – outside of UConn, I would say, is the best team left in this tournament. So
I will say this. I will probably end up, I don't know if I'll take the 4.5, but I'll put in some way, shape, or fashion Houston to advance and probably a parlay. If Duke wins this game, they will, not saying they will win, but they will make the national championship game.
Yeah, I don't hate that as a thought process. I don't like anybody on this side of the bracket.
If I were to go based on gut with the way Duke has played, they look good, but the history and data says Houston otherwise. So next game, a game that I think might be a scrappy one, NC State versus Marquette. Marquette 6.5-point favorites. We already talked about that. We all like NC State to hopefully get it done. So we'll move on to the last two. Purdue -5.5 versus Gonzaga. Matt Painter. 1-6 against the spread in the Sweet 16 or later.
Yeah, this Friday, I think we're getting an upset day. One quick thing I want to say about NC State. DJ Burns, the big fella that bangs down low. Do you see that he has a side hustle where he owns vending machines?
And nice. Does he eat all the product?
He says, that's what he says. He goes, I have to put stuff in there that I know I can't eat. Like the big Texas cinnamon rolls and things like that. He goes, because I can't get any fatter than I already am, is what he said. So he's like, I put things in there that I know I can't eat. And he said he's made like pretty good money having like vending machine.
Somebody give me that. Somebody insert that dog emoji with the side eye.
You're not eating those? Really? Did anybody see today? I don't remember if it was. I think it was Jay Billis that asked him in an interview on TV. He was like, so when did you put on all that weight?
God.
Just blatantly on national TV. When'd you put on all that weight? I didn't hear his response because I just heard that and I shut the video. But
he's good. He can bang down low, but he needs to trim some of that. And
he's not going to the NBA. He's not a guy that's gonna go to the NBA. But I will say NC State has two good big men, and that you see that happen. Like, yes, we have Zach Edey in Purdue, but that's just one guy. Mo Diarra
You're claiming Modiar as a good big well, man.
I was just about to say, he's been balling. I was shaking my head because I'm like, why does this happen to us? The motherfucker leaves and he just looks so good.
Here you go. Here's a thought process. Dennis Gates can't coach big men.
Yeah. Yeah. Based on what we've seen, we'll find out next year, but based on the trend so far, he's not letting them cook.
That or just all the big men from Mizzou end up leaving, and if they do stick around, they end up betting on themselves in the NBA. So, I mean, it's just...
I mean, Modiar is out here banging threes in the NCAA tournament. What and are we watching?
14 boards a game.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I think North Carolina State has an advantage over a lot of teams that have two big guys that play on the floor at the same time for a lot of the game, and they're able to just gobble up rebounds. So,
Jared,
that's a
lesson. I just really appreciate how you spell out North Carolina State. Not many people do. Most people just say NC State. I really love your dedication to the full craft. So
yeah. Hey, got to make it well known.
All right.
Back to Gonzaga. Purdue. I like Gonzaga money line. Straight up. Yep.
I mean, give him on the money line. They've been sneaky good. They smashed McNeese. Was never close in a game that people wanted them to lose in. And then they come out. They beat Kansas by 20.
Well, I was going to say, Purdue. I told you if I was proven wrong, that I'd be proven wrong. And Gonzaga has – St. Mary's did not prove me wrong. I was happy about that one. But Gonzaga has absolutely proved me wrong in the fact that they should be here, because I did not think they should have been anywhere near a 5 seed, and here they are. And I like them to beat Purdue straight up, just like you said. So,
like Travis said, like Matt Painter historically crumbles these situations. Mark Few does not. Mark Few's been here. He knows Kevin how to coach.
Kevin Bacon, yes.
He knows how to coach in these big moments. No matter who's on his team, there's always one sneaky guy on Gonzaga that can just bang from wherever. So
yeah. So I like them. I had them in my final four in my bracket. This is the one thing that I had that's still pulling for me. So there we go. The last game we've got is Creighton versus Tennessee. Tennessee's 2.5-point favorites. These are both teams that I thought going into this were fraudulent. Now one's got to go down.
This is if I'm looking at the slate of games this weekend, outside of the Clemson Arizona game to find a betting angle, this is my toughest game to find a betting angle on. I have ridden Creighton this whole up until this point. I had them against who they beat, who they would go to overtime against. Baylor, Oregon. That's right. There's another green team.
Green team.
I remember I was watching that happen because I had Creighton in a money line parlay to end the night, and also straight up in against the spread. I've been very against Tennessee. I think Tennessee is just the better team overall here. So it pains me to say that I do think Tennessee gets this done. And I like them at the -3. I think a lot of people are going to be on Creighton. And the +3, and if we're thinking this is a weekend where Vegas is going to get their shit back, I unfortunately am going to have to bet Tennessee -3. I don't like it, but I think that's what's going to happen.
It's another game that's close again. A lot of people aren't going to get their bets in quite early since it is a Friday game, but it's leaning Tennessee right now on the money or on the bet percentage. I looked at this as whatever team is going to go cold, because they're both known for being cold at certain times, obviously, is going to lose that game. Hard to predict that, but I had to go with the team that's less one-dimensional in Creighton, because again, you get into the point where you're just shutting down Dalton Connect.
Yeah,
I don't know how they're going to be able to keep up with Creighton's offense. That's my only
thought. I would love to see where the money's at coming Friday, because I would love to bet Creighton. Because I'm like, there are certain games where I have my mindset where no matter where the money's at, I'm betting that. But like certain games, I'm like leaning on the fence on. If I'm going to the route of Vegas and get their shit back, I'm probably going to bet against the public, which I do a lot of times anyway. So we'll see. This is the toughest. I could see it going either way.
Yeah, we've got three Big East teams left, and history and statistics tells us one of them's got to go down this weekend. So if Marquette doesn't, Creighton might. I don't see UConn doing it, but if Creighton gets the job done, I could see Marquette going down. I just feel like one of those teams are going to lose. That have nothing to do with each other. But
I will tell you this. As a top 4 seed in the NCAA tournament, Tennessee has never made the Elite Eight.
Well, there you go. Betting on Creighton. There it is.
Wow. That's a hell of a statistic.
Yeah, it's the 10th time, and they've been the top four seed in the NCAA tournament. They've made the Sweet 16 four times. They've lost in the round of 32 six times.
Oh, wow. So, never made the Elite Eight as a top four seed, huh?
No siree.
So, real fast, we're down to the Sweet 16. Has your national championship pick changed based on performance?
No, because I had UConn. I'm still picking UConn.
Fair enough. I'm still with Houston.
I have Houston. I want to maybe – I would say if I'm looking at the teams left, if there's a team that could beat Houston, it would be UConn.
Well, I was going to say, I told you earlier, I don't know if UConn's going to lose a game by – or lose a game at all, but win a game by less than 10 points. I would be shocked if UConn and Houston aren't in the championship game against each other, but it is March Madness, and while it's been chalk so far, anything's possible.
That would be a good matchup in the championship. Yep. I know it's 1-1, but that would be a good game that we'd see.
Yeah.
So there you have it. It's good March Madness talk. Get you through the weekend before we talk about, I guess the next time we'll talk, we'll have our Final Four.
Yeah, and real fast, I said it last week, and it's held true. I said this is either going to be one of the craziest tournaments of all time or one of the chalkiest tournaments of all time. We got the chalkiest, unfortunately, but
it's looking pretty chalky. But you want to know what is chalky? So I said how they're with the five seed difference considered an upset, and there were seven so far in the men's. Guess how many there have been in the women's?
Yeah, no, I think like three, maybe something like that.
Three.
One. I was looking at that bracket earlier. It's basically 1-4, 1-4, 1-4.
And it was Duke versus Ohio State in the second round.
Yeah.
Or was Ohio State? Yeah.
They're seven seed. They're a seven seed.
Duke beat. Yeah, it had to have been Ohio State. They were two seed, right?
It was 7-2.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I think Duke is the highest seed left as a seven seed in that tournament. It is literally 1-4, 2-3, 1-4, 2-3, 1-5, I believe, 3-7, and then like 1-5, 3-5, or 3-6 or something like that. It's ridiculous. Yeah,
it's not very many upsets are going down in that tournament. That's for damn sure.
Never is.
Not at all. So, like I said, there's our college basketball talk, but we've got a new sport. Nice, say new sport, new league.
Technically
brand new league coming.
Which
surprise, guys! We're talking about pickleball today
on ESPN8, the Ocho, UFL coming right at you. So the UFL is coming back. Well, they're starting. They're merging with the XFL, USFL, making the UFL. They kicked out three. Technically, only. What, three teams from the original?
Well, technically, I was looking it up. The Houston Roughnecks are technically mostly the Houston Roughnecks and Ramblers merged. Most of the Ramblers staff.
But they kept the name for the XFL.
For the Roughnecks, yeah. So five out of the eight teams from the XFL stay. We took three and a half. But yeah, because that's what I was reading. I was like, why are they in the USFL division? But I looked it up, and it was because most of the Rambler staff stayed, and they're just calling themselves the Roughnecks. So
you're not throwing me for a loop, but that throws me for a loop. Just keep the fucking name as the Ramblers.
Yeah,
make it easier on everyone. But it's starting up 10-week season. One thing that I'm going to ask you, because I don't know this, I haven't looked up too much. They're not doing the whole hub city again, are they?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They are? Mm-hmm. I hate that shit. See, I wish the players – I know it's more inexpensive for the players, but I wish that they played in the city because that city would feel more like home to them when they came to play.
I think it's starting to lean that way because you have a lot of these players who have played it for these teams. Like AJ McCarron asked for his release from the Bengals so he could come back and play for the Battlehawks. Like, he's like, hey, I want to go play for St. Louis. I want to go play for the Battlehawks. I want to go back there with my team, my coach. So I think we're starting to kind of like see that now that we're going on our second straight year of the XFL and the USFL. So hopefully we kind of see that going forward.
Yeah, I guess with that, it's going to have to become like, you know, getting paid more, though, to live on your own, not having the meals at like the hub city. And like, cause I look at it kind of like how the UFC PI is. Like, you just basically go there and like you can train there for free and do all this stuff for free so that you're not, they don't have to pay them to live on their own. But either way, so they are doing the hub cities. Where's it at? In Arlington again?
It's in Arlington. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like that creates a little bit of a disadvantage.
Kind of, yes, yeah, it does, especially for those players that are playing for Arlington. We saw them win the whole thing for the XFL last year. Birmingham won the USFL, and yeah, just looking at these teams, I mean, so you, Travis, said the kickoff rule is actually still, they're still doing that in the UFL this year, the same kickoff rule.
But they're doing the NFL kickoff rule, the old one.
No, they're not. I looked up the article. No, they're not.
Pretty sure I saw that the XFL adopted the old, or the NFL adopted the old XFL one, but the USFL is going back to the standard NFL kickoff. Outside of that, the rules are fairly the same.
Which, that's hilarious. You're right. They're switching it.
Yeah.
No, so the UFL is adopting the kickoff setup of the USFL, which places the kickoff at the kicking team's 20-yard line. It creates more return opportunities.
Kickoff out of bounds. They're just moving it back, but they're not putting the blockers right next to each other.
Well, I don't hate that then, because you're not going to get many touchbacks at the 20-yard line.
Yeah,
no, but I think the whole reason that the XFL did that and why the NFL adopted it is for player safety, so you don't have guys running 50 yards full speed at each other, hitting each other. Because instead you have them 10 yards apart, kind of blocking each other. Either way, I think it's stupid. I feel like I know it's going to reduce the kickoff return factor. Just put the ball at the 25-yard line. Let's call it good.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like that they're still keeping the onside kick alternative. You know, instead of doing the onside kick in the fourth quarter, you're allowed to do the fourth and 15. Every article I read was like, and the Battle Hawks pulled this off last year in their season opener when they were down 15-3. And they ended up coming back and winning that game 18-15. They're still doing the 1, 2, and 3 point after touchdowns, which I like. So a lot of cool ideas that I think that they're still keeping. So, yeah.
All right. Well, with that being said, there aren't any lines out yet on the first week, but there are futures out, and there obviously the rosters are out. So give us some notable names on the teams, kind of, you know, if there's notable coaches that might have changed, what we're looking at for if we are wanting to take a future.
Yeah, so the Ethan, we talked about this before the podcast started, and Ethan can jump in when he wants to. To me, the best team on paper and the team to beat in the entire league is going to be the Birmingham Stallions. Their head coach is Skip Holtz, obviously. His dad's Lou Holtz.
Lou Holtz's son.
Yes, they have won 3 consecutive spring league titles, and they have a 17-3 regular season record under Skip Holtz, and they have not lost a postseason game under him. So they've been pretty dominant.
Yeah, and just like listen to some of these names, and you know, when we hear some of these names, we're like, oh well, you know, they weren't that great in the NFL. Well, this isn't the NFL, and so they made it work in the NFL. Their names in the UFL are going to hold a little more weight. So on the Birmingham Stallions specifically, just names that jumped out to me, you've got Taco Charlton out of Michigan. You've got a slew of QBs that, you know, we could argue their greatness or not, but you've got Adrian Martinez, Matt Corral, Jamar Smith, if you want to throw them in there. But Adrian Martinez and Matt Corral are the big names.
Larry Ranchi's there. I read that Adrian Martinez is like the leading guy to be the starter day one, which I think is a mistake in this type of league. I think I'd rather
Matt
Corral.
There.
Absolutely.
And then you got Jay Sternberger from Texas A&M / did Scooby. You play for the Cowboys?
Yes. Scooby Wright.
And then Scooby Wright, you've got Amari Scooby Rogers who from Clemson, who also played for the Packers and the Giants. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, for a while there. Again, not a guy who was very overwhelming in the NFL, but has played it, understands the game. They've got a lot of notable names on their roster, kind of on both sides of the ball.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you're looking at obviously no guy who's, you know, dominating the NFL is going to come over the UFL, but it's still NFL level talent. Like, you look at these other guys who never made a roster and never took a snap in the NFL, you're not going to know them. You know these guys because they've played fucking meaningful snaps, like your Taco Charltons and your Matt Corral, who was drafted to possibly be a future quarterback, things like that.
But, yeah. So to me, Birmingham is like the best team on paper. I think they're the team to beat.
And they're again, plus 300, I think, to win the league.
Yeah. And then I not to be biased, but looking at, like, we were talking about this too before we started, I think St. Louis is the next best team just because of who you have behind under center. You have AJ McCarron, probably one of the only quarterbacks in this entire league who's actually taking a meaningful NFL snap. I mean, for Christ's sakes, whenever Joe Burrow went down, you know, Cincinnati signed them to be their backup quarterback last year. That, to me, means a whole hell of a lot. I also think they have the best receiving core in the entire league with Hakeem Butler, Marcel Aitman, two big bodies that can go up and get the ball. They also have Jakor Peterson, who's a return specialist, killer, speedy guy, 5'8". And the running back's Wayne Gallman, who's also spent a lot of meaningful snaps. Wayne
Gallman.
Yep. In the NFL. Yeah. So yep. I think they have the best offense, like, on paper in the UFL. And I think they're going to be able to put up points and put up points quick. My one caveat here is the play caller, still the guy from last year. God, I can't remember his name. And he made some questionable decisions at some times from what I remember. But they're 7-3 last year, returning majority of the same team, missed the playoffs due to a silly tiebreaker. So that's why I think, to me, they're the second best team on paper, and the odds show that too, I think.
Bruce Gradkowski is their offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm. So. Other notable names that I just, you know, as I was looking through the rosters earlier, that kind of stood out to me. The DC Defenders also have a pretty decent put together roster led by Jordan Tamu, who we know was a St. Louis Battlehawk in 2020 before COVID. They've also got Cameron Harris as a running back out of Miami. Kiki QT as a wide receiver. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Kiki QT.
Yep. And then also not even just on the DC Defenders, but just in general, for those of you who I know are locals like us, Mizzou fans like us, there are a lot of Missouri players in this league. The Defenders have Yasir Durant, as well as some other Mizzou player that I'd never heard of, Michael Mayetti. Obviously, we just talked about Larry Roundtree. I could pull it up. I saw a few others earlier. They're not jumping off the top of my head, but there were six or seven Mizzou players in this league, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah. Another thing, I think DC to me is like the third best team too. They were 9-1 last year. 9-0. They've been 9-0 at home over their entirety of the XFL and now going into the UFL. They have Greg Williams as defensive coordinator, who is obviously a dog in his own right. You know, he teaches his players to just, you know, be tough and physical. DJ Swearinger being one of their safety pieces is huge, I think. I think DC is going to be another tough team to play against in this league for sure.
Another name that you guys might know, as I'm looking through some of the Mizzou players who are in this league, Kiki Chisholm, wide receiver.
And Paul Adams.
Yeah.
You're missing one of the main pieces. Vinny Papali.
Vince Papali?
Vince Papali's son.
Oh, really?
Oh, nice.
It's either his son or his grandson. And then Marquette King is a big name, the punter from the Raiders. And going back, the punting rule, I don't know if this was in the XFL last year. I don't know how much I love this. So they basically eliminated coffin corner punts. So if you punt the ball out of bounds inside the 20, it comes back out to the 20. So you can't – the only way you can down an opponent inside the 20 is if it, like, rolls and you pick it up. You can't punt it out of bounds.
Huh. Which coffin corners aren't really a huge thing in the NFL anymore. I feel like I do always do it in Madden because I don't want – that's what I try to aim for. But I don't see it being a huge thing.
Because there's no way to put backspin on your punt in Madden.
That's true. That's true. So, like, those are the big three teams that jumped up to me. Some teams I think are going to be absolute dog shit. are going to be the San Antonio Brahmas. I don't see them being any good, mainly because of their quarterback. They got Ben Kurt, which is the fucking Twitch streamer.
Former Green Bay Packers legend.
Yeah, Chase Garbers, Quentin Dormady, and Tom Flacco, Joe Flacco's little brother, are competing for their starting job. So when I'm looking at that, I'm like, oof. And their running back is Anthony McFarland and Cody Latimer. So I think that's a team that's going to be not very good. Wade Phillips, still a coach in San Antonio. And also another team I think is going to be bad is going to be Michigan. Michigan Panthers, who the Battlehawks kick off against this weekend. Their quarterback is EJ Perry, whoever the fuck that is. Just a lot of names that don't jump out to me on paper. So those are two teams that I'm like, yeah, Memphis is also up there too. I think, and I've said this since the two leagues have been side by side, even pre-COVID, I think the talent level in the XFL is better than the USFL. Outside of Birmingham, obviously, but and that's why they've maybe won these three championships in a row. So maybe they'll be tested a little bit. Now they're stepping up in competition, I feel like, by playing some of these XFL caliber teams.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you looked at the two leagues, I feel like the XFL is a little bit more sexy to join than the USFL. So all of the higher quality players were going to go play for the XFL. And then when you can join the two, the talent pool gets a lot larger.
Yeah,
just from the teams to pick from. You're gonna have the also, more volume on teams with better players.
The Houston Roughnecks have Reed Sinnett, Jared Guarantano, and Nolan Henderson fighting for the starting job.
Nolan Henderson sounds like a baseball player.
Who?
Yeah.
Who? Yeah.
Reed Sinnett's spent some time in the NFL, I believe, at somewhere. But I don't know where.
I want to say he was the bat. Was he not? But he was the backup for the Dolphins last year.
He was. Well, was that year? It was the year before Tua.
I thought it was Tua's first year.
Maybe, but
either way, it kicks off this year.
This
weekend, and we'll probably once the lines come out, we might put some out on Twitter. So follow there for what we will be betting on. Once we get a little bit more info under our belt in the first week under our belt, it might get a little bit more interesting.
Which if you go to Travis, me and Travis's Action Network, that's both one of our top leagues is the XFL. We've not done too bad at it over the last.
You know why? Small sample size.
Exactly. But hey, I'll take it. I think I'm 17-11 in the XFL overall. So
there you go. Positive in the green. Talked about the XFL.
UFL.
Now we got to lead into UFL. God, that's going to take so hard to get used to saying UFL. Got to talk about two big storylines, or basically one kind of encompassing storyline going across sports right now, and some controversy about how betting has kind of taken over like mainstream sporting news. A lot of players getting in trouble for betting. People are complaining, oh, you shouldn't make betting. Like, this is what happens when you make betting legal, blah, blah, blah. Just don't be stupid. First one, we got to talk about the whole Shohei Ohtani thing.
I have thoughts about this, but I'll let you go with it.
We all do.
Obviously, it came out that his translator had been using a bookmaker, which is basically an illegal bookie because it's not legal in California, and that $4.5 million in funds were transferred from Shohei's account to this bookmaker, and he is denying all of it and saying
he said he stole it from him.
Yeah. First of all, how are you going to steal $4.5 million?
Did you guys see what Pete Rose said? Pete Rose said, "I wish I had a translator."
Yeah, I mean,
the little selfie video he took.
Yeah, he's like, I wish I had a translator, because I think that's what it boils down to.
I don't know how much evidence or whatever there was against Pete Rose back in the day. Obviously, it could not be nearly as much as now. Bank transfers from Shohei Ohtani's personal bank account to a bookmaker.
Well, Pete Rose, the bookies can't kind of rat it on him. He was a we'll talk about it here in a few minutes, but he's like a Jonte situation, betting on his own games. And do we ever find out that if the translator, I'm using quotes and using that roughly, was he betting on Angels games and Shohei props? Like, what was he? It was just overall bets. Like, what was it?
Well, see, I don't think any of that's come out yet, but it will, because in this day and age of technology, like Travis said, wire transfers, easily trackable data, they'll find whatever they need to find, whether Shohei's innocent, guilty, whatever. It's going to come out.
Yeah. I saw Jack Mack from Barstool put out a TikTok video of Shohei Ohtani. I think this was 2 years ago. At a March Madness game, it was Gonzaga versus somebody, I can't remember what it was, and he's like visibly sweating, like looking at the scoreboard, like doing one of these, like side eyeing it, like looking visibly nervous. And here's my thing though: is it illegal for professional athletes to bet on any sport at all?
No.
No, but it is if it's illegally.
Right. Yeah. If it's in a state where it's not allowed or through an illegal bookie, but no, it's not, because players will bet on other sports all the time. But regardless, if you're illegally betting or if you're betting on your sport, I think the issue that I had, I was going to get on a whole soapbox, but I think we've covered pretty much all we really need to cover. But my thing is this, is that I've never disliked Shohei. I've enjoyed the fact that he's been one of the most unique talents of our generation, at least, and been able to watch that. I was obviously annoyed that he went to the Dodgers, did all the like pay cutting, deferred. That's really not his fault. If somebody's going to throw a bag at you and then tell you, hey, we're going to build a team around you, I probably would have taken the offer too. The issue that I'm going to run into is that regardless of who it is, because everything that I've been hearing over the last couple of days is, well, that's MLB's poster child. If something happens to him, this is such a bad look for the MLB. Who fucking cares? If you care more about what the image of the MLB is going to look like and you want to sweep this under the rug versus taking accountability for a player, regardless of stature, doing something as blatant as, if it comes out, you know, allegedly right now, but if it comes out and he's the one who was behind all of the transactions, the betting, the wiring of money, and he had any involvement in it, ban him for life. Or the alternative, you put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame immediately. Like, yep. you have one of two options. Is you, and there's no way to save face for the MLB if it comes out, because either you are going to walk over this and let Pete Rose in, and it's a shit look because you're like, well, we don't want to get our best guy in trouble, so let's just do the next best thing and put a player who's been banned for 30 plus years into the Hall of Fame as kind of a consolation prize, or whatever. Or option two, you make a statement and you say, doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what you do, you break the rules, you break the law, you're in trouble. This is what it is. Shouldn't have done it.
Yeah, because I like that point, because Pete Rose was the Shohei Ohtani back when he was playing.
He's the all-time hit record.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's silly to me that we're going to move the goalposts for this guy. And I don't want to get into politics, and I won't get into politics in this one, but if you listen to this, you know what I'm implying here is, because like, I think if he was an American born athlete, this would be cut and dry. I'm just going to put it at that.
I think it's less to do with that and more with the level of talent. And I'll say this, there's no evidence to say that the MLB wants to sweep it under the rug, because they launched the investigation. They're looking into it. It's everybody around him, the media, that's like, we don't want this to happen to Shohei. No, I honestly think we do, because if we want this issue to stop, you take down your best athlete. You say, don't fucking do this shit. Like, we remember. And also people are like, well, he blatantly denied it. He denied all the allegations. Yeah. So did Ryan Braun when he got tested for PEDs, and guess what? And it ended up being true, and he got suspended for a whole year. So did Mark McGuire.
I mean, yeah, Mark McGuire. People got on a grand jury testimony and blatantly lied about it. So, yeah. I mean, Mark McGuire committed perjury.
And people lie about murdering people, so you don't think he's going to lie about placing bets? Yep. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it will make me no happier to see it happen to the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in the meantime, while all this is going on, the MLB season starts this weekend. what do you do with him?
Well, until anything comes out, he plays. Because at this point, it's just allegations. It's not like there's charges out against him. It's not like it's similar. This is a bad example, I guess I should say, but similar to the Terrence Shannon issue with him allegedly raping that girl.
Yeah,
he's still playing. he's got a court date coming up, but yeah,
it comes out that Shohei is guilty. Dodgers forfeit all their wins.
I agree. Vacate all their championships
that he plays in. Yeah, it's tough that you can't do anything in the meantime because likely nothing will be done about this. I would venture to say this season.
It'll take a while for sure because it's not even just MLB. The FBI launched an investigation into it too. So we know how that can take months, weeks, whatever. So yeah, it'll be a while, but
we'll go this end. Let's take a vote on who thinks it was him and who thinks it was his translator. Because I'm thinking, I'm 100% all that he placed these bets.
Or they place them together. I mean,
yeah, like, he's still doing it himself.
Well, the thing is, there's no way. Yeah.
There's no way. And you got all the videos circulating around of the day before all this came out, him and his translator are laughing it up in the dugout. I'm sorry, I wouldn't be laughing up in the dugout if I just gave this guy $4.5 million. He's been stealing it out of my account.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like any classic like mobster or mafia movie. Like you always have a fall guy. You have a guy who like, hey, you give him the money. We get caught. You're taking the blame for this. Like that is how it goes. I mean, it's classic. And this is that exact situation.
That's all the questions that Shohei didn't answer in his statement he gave is one.
We didn't answer any questions. He just made a statement.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, also fishy. Yeah, but in his statement, he didn't answer any questions along the lines of, "How did he have access to your bank account? How did you not notice that $4.5 million went missing?" And before the people say, "Well, Shohei's got millions. He's probably not checking his bank account." The dude deferred everything but $2 million a year in his contract. So, I mean, I know he's got endorsements and things like that. And he's probably got money stocked up, but I'd be checking my bank account. Occasionally, at least
20 mil sitting in their checking account.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So it goes back to why'd you give him access to your bank account? How did you not know the money went missing? And then why does the story keep changing? Cause first it was, oh, I wired him the money. Like I sent the $4.5 million. Then it was, oh, he actually stole it out of my account. And then it was, you know, I had no idea what was even going on. And then again, like you said, they look buddy buddy the day before it happened. I think to Jared's point, it was a shit. They found out you got to be the fall guy for this. We'll still be friends on the low key. Because apparently they were good friends too. He wasn't just his translator. So like, he was probably like, hey, take the blame. We'll get through this. He's like, I'll get my best lawyers. And then we'll keep it hush hush. We're good to go. That's what I think it is.
Yeah, because there's no need for him to be wiring his translator money because he's being paid by the organization that he is employed by. Like the Angels were paying him a salary to be Shohei Ohtani's translator. There's no need for Shohei Ohtani to be wiring him $4.5 million.
The other question is no bookie is going to authorize that big of a bet to somebody who's only making $300,000 a year, which is what his translator was making. If you're betting $4.5 million, you think a bookie's going to look and be like, I'll take that because you're good for it. Like, no, you know, he's good for it because he's got somebody in his pocket that's going to give him money.
Yeah. So this is it'd be interesting to see what happens from the investigation. But I'm kind of on the side of Ethan is they're pretty good at sweeping stuff under the rug. I mean, have been since the Bud Selig days. So wouldn't be surprised if it happens here. And they'll just continue moving that goalpost. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'll see if the MLB actually does, though, because Wander Franco was their next generational star, and we saw what happened to him. So the dude is gone, like just out of the picture forever. So
it's a wazzy, it's a woozy.
What happened with him?
He was having a relationship with a 14-year-old girl in Cuba, I believe.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep.
Yep. That's about it. That's all you need to know about that one. And yep. Is he done? They suspended him indefinitely, right?
Yeah. I don't know if there's been a definitive result of whatever was going on with that, but he is not in the league. No, not currently.
Yikers. For all people holding on to his cards that were worth thousands of dollars.
Burn those cards now.
They're now kindling. You can just fucking start your fire with those. Start a grill. But with that being said, like we mentioned, the MLB season does start on Thursday. It's a long one. We usually don't do too much. We'll put out picks and props and K props throughout the year. Ethan is big in the MLB, something that I'm probably going to get more into this year because I got sucked into a fantasy baseball league. Ethan, just give us some thoughts on the MLB.
Yeah, I won't spend too much time on it. I will say one thing I wanted to say first. I gave my predictions last year. I gave you like my top five or whatever. Three of them bombed like miserably. I remember one of them was that I said Jordan Walker was winning Rookie of the Year and finishing top 10 in MVP voting. Don't even know if that was his fault because the organization was like, hey, we're just going to send you down midseason for a month or two and then we'll bring you back up and everything will be fine. But the ones that I did nail on the head, and you can go back and listen if you want to, is Jared asked me specifically, what are two teams or what are some teams that are under the radar that
you said the Rangers
great season? I said the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. They were both in the World Series. So I want to throw that out there first.
All right. So give us two more. Let's see if you can nail them.
So that's what I was going to do. I was going to say one team that I had up until an hour before this episode, if nobody saw, Jordan Montgomery signed with the Diamondbacks. So he is in their rotation now. He was the last big free agent piece that was not signed yet. Jordan Montgomery is in the Diamondbacks. Before that, and I'm still going to kind of hold true to it, the NL West is a gauntlet this year. You've got the Dodgers. You've got the Diamondbacks who were in the World Series last year. The Padres have made some key additions, but they also lost some key pieces in Juan Soto, Josh Hader, so on and so forth. But the Giants are a team that I would put on your radar if you were like, who do I want to take a flyer, even just to make the playoffs? I don't know what their odds are. I'm assuming it's plus money with how big the NL West is this year. But their roster this year is looking mighty fine. They've made some big key additions in their rotation. Namely, they still have Alex Cobb. They still have Logan Webb. They added Jordan Hicks. And I know for us Cardinals fans, we're like, it doesn't really stand out. They made him a starter, and he has been dominating this spring. He pitched today through five innings, no hit ball, and struck out 10 people. So just like every other person that leaves the Cardinals, he's probably going to have a ridiculous year. They also have a really good bullpen led by Camilo Duvall. He's going to have a really good season as a closer. And then they've still got that lineup that they added Matt Chapman. They still have Yastrzemski. They still have guys like Wilmer Flores. I think they just have a really well-rounded roster with a really good bullpen and a top four starting rotation in the NL. So be on the lookout for them. Hard division. Other teams that I think are overhyped, or not other teams that I think overhyped, teams that I think are overhyped, the Cubs. I'm going to say it year in and year out probably, but this year specifically, people are so high on the Cubs with some of the moves that they've made, but I feel like they lost more pieces than they gained. People are betting on them to win the division this year. I think the NL Central is kind of wide open, but I don't think the Cubs are going to take it. The Brewers, super overrated this year. I really think that if you wanted to take a team to win the Central, it'd be the Reds. I don't even want to say it's the Cardinals. I think the Reds could sneak in there and win it. What else do I got for you? Jackson Merrill from the Padres was another one that I wanted to throw out. If anybody wanted to take a flyer on Rookie of the Year, he's plus 1,100. He is going to start day one. And he is going to be a fantastic piece for them. They lost Juan Soto. He's an outfielder. He's kind of just jumping into his place. Or a sneaky
Victor Rookie Scott. Of the
Year, Victor Scott. I was going to throw that in there. He is like plus 2,200 right now or something like that I saw earlier. He is now starting from day one as well with the injury to Dylan Carlson. And I don't think he will be sent down because I think he is going to be a monster from day one. It's not a guy who's going to hit for a ton of power, but he might hit 315 and steal 80 bases. Like
if you know the Cardinals, they always they have about eight good outfielders and nine of them are hurt. So
yeah.
Yep.
Take your pick on that one. But MLB season is long. So we will follow up. Maybe we'll do a little mid-season. Ethan, write these down in your personal journal that you read every night before you go to bed. and we can recap these come late June, early July.
Yeah. Last thing I wanted to do, I think some divisions are pretty cut and dry on division winners. I think the Dodgers will probably run away with the division. I think the Braves will run away with the division. In the AL West, it's probably going to be the Astros, even as much as I think, you know, the Rangers just came off a World Series win. The Mariners are usually pretty good. But Central divisions, wide open, sneaky. Take a flyer on the Kansas City Royals. They made a ton of offseason moves, and they've got a lot of young talent, and that division sucks. The Twins have a really good pitching staff, like top to bottom. They won it last year. They won 90 games. They'll probably win it again. Their offense is to be desired. If the Royals can put together some pitching, I think that their offense will be good. So sneaky, if you want a team that's definitely plus money to win their division, good pick right there as well.
All right. You heard it from our MLB guru right there.
Giants and Royals.
Now, Giants, Royals.
World Series. Now,
as long as any players aren't betting against themselves. So we talked about Shohei. Like, I can talk about Jonte Porter. The guy that we watched, walked around campus with at Mizzou. Kind of was, I mean, he didn't really take off in the NBA. And then this year he kind of hopped back in, was doing fairly decent. Came out that he was, I don't know if he was taking them himself, but he was definitely giving insider information to buddies, friends, whoever, on taking the under of his props on whatever night. Specifically, there was one night that was mentioned where he
re-aggravated an eye injury.
Yeah. Early in the game, he aggravated an injury, was taken out with like within the first 5 minutes, didn't come back in. And one of the most bet prop that night in the NBA was the under on one of his props that hit. And I think that's what set it all off.
Yep. Well, it's that. And then I read today there was that one, and then there was another instance, both very similar. He played less than 10 minutes in both games. The biggest bet of the night in both of those games was the under. That one was the eye injury. The other game, he claimed he was ill and took himself out and didn't play for the rest of the game due to an illness.
You just play and don't do well.
Right.
Like, could it be more obvious? Like, yeah. I'm sorry, but how stupid do you have to be? How dumb do you have to be?
Because it's easily flagged nowadays, like we've talked about with technology, is these bookies and bookmakers, they're looking and they're like, why the hell? You know, we get like 18 Jonte Porter bets a day. Now we've got 18,000. Like, why are there suddenly so many bets on Jonte Porter?
You can see the handle. They probably have it charted out on what bets taken, how much they're losing on each bet. Like, it is a very much data research based field. And like, the bookmakers sit down, they do their work. How do you think they come up with these fucking spreads on the games and these numbers that are so close? Like, they know what they're looking at. And when you just go out there and say, my eye hurts.
Like, yeah. I got poked in the eye, coach. No, you didn't. Yeah, I think I did. Remember the other
day? There's $1.4 million on your under and rebounds. Yeah. Where the fuck did that come from? Last night, there was $35,000.
I don't know, coach. I don't know. It is what it is. You know, I'm just not feeling it tonight. I feel a little sick.
Weird coincidence. I
mean, it's just that family. Jesus Christ. It must be them being vegans. I don't know. The fact that they – maybe something's not going to their fucking brain, right, where it's processing.
They're not getting all the chemicals. Well, you got the one – there's one shining star in that family.
Eh. Yeah, I know.
And it's the – what did he broke the record for
– most threes in a season. For the Denver Nuggets.
Not Jonte, Michael Porter, for those of you who didn't understand the reference. But, hey, he's been great in the NBA, I'd say.
He has. I was going to say, some people may not understand the reference because I saw the other night, well, it's been a couple of weeks, I don't know if you guys saw it, when Jonte and Michael Porter did a jersey swap and somebody quoted it and said, I don't get how they're brothers. One's a junior and one's not. Like, shouldn't they both be juniors? Nobody, that's not how that works. But yeah, no, Michael Porter Jr. has had a pretty successful NBA career, and he's a champion.
Yeah. But I mean,
Jared said there's something going wrong with family. I think he might be alluding to their other younger brother who got in that DUI accident a couple of years ago and killed a guy. It's like, these guys can't get out of their own way.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
I mean, it's just silly. Dating back to Michael Porter Jr. and him having the back injury at Mizzou and then trying to play. I don't know. I just don't understand, like, what is going through your head when you're I just don't. I mean, like Travis's point, like, make it less obvious. Like, don't take yourself out of the game. Just play and do bad. Like, or, you know, just don't try. Don't box out. And then maybe get taken out of the game by your coach. Don't say, hey, I got hurt or I'm sick. And, oh, man, Jonte, you had all this money coming in on your props. And I saw one guy in the comments is like, if you're betting on Jonte Porter props, you're sick in the head anyway. Like, first of all.
I've taken way more obscure props, but yes.
But I'm just saying, like,
checks out.
It's just fucking weird, dude. And then how did you not think you were going to get caught? Especially doing it that frequently.
Yeah, it's all these players, like, all these professional sports players that place bets. You're making enough money. You got to think that there's something else better to do.
Go to the blackjack table. Go to the blackjack table or do something. Like, if you want to fucking.
But hey, I can control what's happening here.
Yeah.
I know which it's makes, automatic money.
Which opens up to a bigger conversation. How often is this actually happening that we don't hear about?
Probably a lot.
Because the reason why this was flagged, because like Travis said, it was either him placing it or insider information, probably on a legal sports betting app. How much of this is happening, like in a Shohei Ohtani situation where they're off the books, not being tracked, not being regulated, where it's not as easily caught?
Oh, it's happening all the time. And if people want to think it's like, oh, just because it's the modern day and age and people can do it straight from their phones and the sports are rigged now, this has been happening forever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Forever.
It's been happening for sure since 1919 with the Black Sox. I mean, exactly. It's been happening since then.
That's Ethan's fantasy baseball team.
It sure is. Yeah. You got to throw gambling into it somehow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's been going on forever. Can you stop it? I don't know.
Probably not. I mean, the only way to try to mitigate it is, like I talked about with the Shohei instances, you got to come down hard on the players who get caught. That's like the only way. Like, if Jonte's famous Shohei's comes out to be 100% true,
his is pretty clear cut. He's not playing another fucking minute of basketball in the NBA or America for that regard.
Ever, anywhere. He won't play anywhere. Travis said he's going to go to prison. I don't think he'll go to prison. I think he'll probably have to have a lot of fines.
Federal fucking prison.
No.
Yeah, I don't know how it works.
The Dana White video.
No.
Do you remember that?
He's fast.
I don't remember.
What? Whenever when that coach, that the guy that was ringside, gave away all those tips about his fighter.
Oh, yeah.
Was like, oh, you think he's going to get in trouble? He's going to prison. Federal fucking prison. I mean, you get in trouble. You're going to get in legal trouble for sure. More than just getting kicked out of the league.
Yep.
Because at that point, that's tampering, and that's basically the same thing as like insider trading. People go to jail for that all the time.
True.
Yep.
So, yeah.
You're losing a company money one way or another.
Join his brother in the cell.
God damn.
never a dull moment on the Two Drunk Brothers.
Speaking of DUIs, real fast, not to change topics, but do you guys see the Trevor Etienne news?
Yeah,
oh, thank God he didn't come to Missouri.
That was what literally was just going to be my whole point. Is we were like, oh, we could get Trevor Etienne. I'm super glad that we didn't, because he may not play a single game this year.
Hey,
he won't.
Georgia football training staff, let's order our guys Ubers. All right.
Yeah.
No shit.
Let's have a nice Uber concierge service. I know you can afford it. So yeah.
Jalen Carter's actually the one who made the phone call to Trevor Etienne to come to Georgia. He's like, bro, you can drive drunk all the time. Jesus. Trust me.
Christ. They'll never get you.
So God, you fucking ram into somebody. God. I mean.
Well, if you're drunk and running into somebody, we got to think that ship operator in Baltimore was drunk too then.
Man, talk about a crazy news week just in the last couple days. I had to text all the friends that I have up in the DC area. I was like, not that you guys would have been out at 1:30 in the morning in Baltimore, but I just want to make sure you weren't on that bridge.
Weren't driving across that bridge.
That's crazy. I've driven across that bridge multiple times.
Imagine, and to think that, first of all, that's like one of my biggest fears, driving across a bridge and it collapse. Mm-hmm. Oh, this could never happen. And then imagine it happening.
Yeah.
Yep. And first of all, would be even more like make me panic. So it happened in the dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No. And so apparently chance. I heard a police scanner like came out. They were blocking
the bridge off. Well, I think once they saw the ship was getting close, they shut that shit down immediately. I don't know if the people that were on the bridge could get off, but.
Well, so apparently it was so last minute because it wasn't like there was traffic on the bridge. What had happened was it was so last minute. And by last minute, within probably like 2.5 minute span or whatever, when they first started realizing like this ship's off course, we got to do something. They had an officer stationed
towards the iceberg.
Yeah, they had an officer stationed on the northbound side that blocked all traffic northbound, but they couldn't get anybody south side yet. There was a guy en route. So he was coming into south side based on what I heard on the police scanner. And it sounds like he didn't make it in time and they couldn't shut that side off. So like 10 to 15 cars, it sounds like were just keep going like southbound. And then some of them got caught when it happened. Cause like, you know, if you're just driving on the road at 1:30 in the morning, you're probably not paying attention to whether or not there's a fucking barge off to the side. Maybe you are, but
probably can't see it.
Exactly. Yeah,
terrifying.
So
terrifying.
Yeah.
So is that not a place? Should that guy not have been there? That barge? Like, what's the
story? So what happened is everything that I've heard and read, and that's come out based on the reports and everything, is their power malfunctioned on the barge, and you can see it in the video. Everything on that barge shuts off at one point, and when that happens, they lose their ability to steer. My guess is the waters drifted them. Power comes back on because they have backup generators. They try to correct course, shuts off again. And then they're off for like another 15 seconds. And in that time, it had drifted so far by the time they could even do anything about it, they couldn't correct course, is what I had seen and read.
We were at dinner with our dad earlier tonight. He made a good point. Why didn't the ship sink?
Well, I mean, it just hit the post.
There's a huge hole in the side of it, though.
Yeah, but it's a huge ass barge. Like, I don't know if you saw
it. I was just like, I just think, good question. It was just sitting there.
Yeah.
After a fucking bridge fell on top of it. I would think that it would go under, but maybe not.
Fair. I'd also read that there were guys actively working on the bridge.
Yeah.
So there were six
construction workers were the guys that they were still searching for that they kind of presumed dead, which.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks. That's fucking even more terrifying. Being in a car is one thing, but being out in the open and just falling into the river.
Mm-hmm. With a bunch of steel coming down on top of you.
On top of you.
Yeah.
I'll take a hard pass on that. That's why I work inside.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. But had to bring that up a little bit. Crazy week of news and sports and everything else. So definitely didn't miss anything. Do you guys have anything for the alcoholics before we leave?
Yeah, I have one thing that you guys probably don't care about, but I thought was super interesting. The Celtics clinched the number one seed in the East before any other team in the entire NBA clinched a playoff spot. Just insanity.
Impressive. They still won't win.
Probably not, but we'll see.
Happens year in, year out. Still won't win. Jason Tatum in the playoffs like no other.
Yep.
But there you have it.
That's all.
That's it.
Yep. All right.
Get you in and out in an hour and a half. We'll talk to you guys next week with the Elite Eight. Recap some UFL week one. What other nonsense we can throw at you?
3 weeks away. NFL draft.
Yes, sir.
2 weeks away. Masters.
Yes, sir. Peace.